This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM and webcasting at kcrw.com.
From KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call them.
Rita hits. Is America ready? Is conservatism cracking up? Plus, war demonstrations heat up while Bush holds firm. What next in Iraq? Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of the political spectrum and our Santa Monica studio is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the LA Times. On the right from Washington, as always, is Tony Blankley, editorial page editor and columnist for The Washington Times and author of The West's Last Chance. Tony, what's the subtitle again? I apologize for not having it in front
of
me.
Will we win the Battle of Civilizations?
Will we win the Battle of Civilizations?
The Clash,
and,
actually.
And
I'm
the
sorry,
Clash.
The Clash of, I'm sorry.
The Clash.
And I just got off an airplane.
It's must read. That's all I can say. And in the representing the ultra-liberal or eclectic blogosphere is our own Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. Welcome all from across the country, across the political spectrum. Obviously a tumultuous week as we went to air on Friday. Hurricane Rita is coming inward. The latest, at least as we were going to air, is that as it was roaring toward the Texas and Louisiana coast with 135-mile-an-hour winds, there were monumental traffic jams across along the evacuation routes, raising fears of a crippling blow to the nation's oil refining industry. There is talk that Houston and Galveston, at least at this hour, may avoid a direct hit. There was a direct hit and a terrible tragedy where a bus that was leaving broke into fire, and more than 20, I guess it's elderly folks from nursing homes who are being evacuated, have died. Bob Scheer, you've been obviously watching all this. What do you make of where we're headed? President Bush, obviously now, I think he's on the ground trying to counteract the sort of dilatory image he had in the first situation. What do you make of it, Bob?
Well, we have mass chaos, and it reflects a lack of leadership. There's no other way to explain it on the federal level. We had the warning in New Orleans. We know you have to be able to evacuate cities. And yet, clearly, no intelligent plan was put in place for dealing with Texas now, his home state. And the idea that people are stuck in 100-mile-long traffic jams, that they're still figuring out whether to close lanes on the opposing side, what to do and so forth, that they're running out of gas, there isn't emergency gas supplies. What this whole thing defines Bush as is, you know, he was the Yale leader at Yale, not the quarterback. And he never will be that. And today he sort of stumbled on himself Friday where he said, well, we're going down there, but I don't want my entourage to get in the way. So why is he going down there? We have computers. We have Wi-Fi. We certainly have telephones. And the commander-in-chief ought to be able to organize the defense of our own citizens in a timely, expeditious fashion.
Tony?
Look, I think our listeners know that I've been pretty tough on the president, certainly as tough as any other Republican or conservative on the air regarding his performance in Katrina, excuse me. She's my publicist.
She's my daughter.
but I happen to have been down in Texas last night and this morning. I came out at a 6:30 a.m. flight. And to lay off the problem of a well-planned but overwhelmed by the 2 million evacuation of cars out of Houston on the president is, to me, completely unfair. The Texans have a big plan. I mean, they're even running for gas in Dallas, which is 300 miles away from it. This is a huge effort. And yes, there have been problems, but to say that you can perfectly evacuate 2 million people within 2 days, it defies the laws of physics. There are only so many roads, and frankly, as I understand it, last night they were talking about bringing in tankers to supply the cars, but you are not going to have this kind of a mass emergency movement of people run off perfectly. Even the Germans couldn't do that.
Ariana?
Well,
you're familiar with the Germans and their...
It's not a question of blaming the president himself. It's really the administration. It's the fact that since September 11, we knew we had to be prepared for things like evacuations, for things like the public health infrastructure working. All that stuff should not have come as such an enormous surprise as it has come. And that's really, I think, the point that that Bob is making. What happened to all those plants? I mean, the obvious basic things like not running out of gas, like closing the lanes of the opposing traffic. There's a sense of failure of leadership at every level. And I really go back to the misguided priorities. If we had spent 10% of the amount of money we're spending in Iraq, $5 billion a month, think of what we could have achieved in terms of preparedness, in terms of the ability to cope with what could have been infinitely worse, of course, if this had been an unexpected terrorist
threat. This is simply beyond the pale. Imagine Los Angeles. If you have a perfect plan designed by the smartest people in the world, you think you can evacuate 7 million people off the Santa Monica Freeway and the San Diego Freeway on 24 or 48 hours' notice? It is a physical impossibility. The evacuation of modern large cities in their entirety within a matter of hours cannot be done, no matter who designs a plan.
There is something. I mean, look, there's something to what Tony says about the magnitude of the task, and all of us who live in L.A. would probably like to see some forced evacuation of the 405 sometime, given the traffic. But the idea, and there have been a few pieces that have mentioned this recently, that since 9/11 till today, more time has passed than passed from Pearl Harbor to victory in Europe and Japan, I think, during World War II. And when you think about the magnitude of what was mobilized by public institutions in terms of trying to combat our foes and also to mobilize an industrial base, it does seem like we have been asleep at the switch and that there's been enormous bickering. And, Tony, I think you talk about some of this stuff in your book. But the idea that 4 years into this, we're in a state when natural disasters sort of totally stymie us and overwhelm us doesn't bode well for, God forbid, bioterrorism or anything else.
I talk about that a lot in my book. I talk about the complacency, and somebody has commented that mine has been the most withering criticism of the president's war on terrorism yet published, even though I've been supportive of him generally. But when it comes to evacuation of cities, I mean, I happen to know there are studies done about evacuating Washington in the case of a radiological bomb, and it can't be done. And if we want to really be able to evacuate our major cities in 48 hours, we're going to have the biggest road construction program. And I'm not sure whether anybody wants to start spending the billions of dollars to build new extra highways. The last time we did this was basically under Eisenhower when he built the interstate highway system, allegedly for national security reasons. And it's unfathomable. The fact is that if a major city has to be evacuated quickly, it cannot be. That's simply a fact. And there's nothing we're going to do in the next 10 years that's going to change that.
But maybe we need roads, or maybe we need different airlift capability. I mean, it's certainly not beyond the mind of man to actually.
You can't airlift 6 million people out of LAX in 24 hours.
Bob?
Yeah, look, first of all.
You've tried that yourself, haven't you, Bob?
First of all, the issue here is lack of planning. There's no coordination, once again, between the city, the state, and the federal government. And you'd think if there's one state that Bush would be able to coordinate with, would be Texas. So there's no coordination. Who was in charge is the same old crap. Should Houston have been evacuated? Were right warnings given out? And there's no leadership, so people panicked. People evacuated who didn't have to evacuate, and lives were lost. But let me just say one note. You were in the Reagan administration, Tony. The Reagan administration, I wrote a book called With Enough Shovels about this. The Reagan administration insisted that the Soviet Union was planning to wage winnable nuclear war against the United States because they could evacuate Moscow in 15 minutes. Now, that was the official position of the Reagan administration. And we have, during the entire nuclear era, been planning for evacuation in case there should be a nuclear threat. And the idea that after 9/11, there are still, forget about how fast you can do it, the idea that there aren't coordinated plans that snap into place with the advance warning of New Orleans, that's the real scandal here.
Two points. First of all, I didn't author that proposition, which is ludicrous. I've spent a lot of time in Moscow, and the idea that you'd move, 8 million people out of Moscow in 15 minutes, you can't even get through a line to buy a dull in 15 minutes. So, I mean, that's obviously – that must have been exaggerated rhetoric by someone in communications shop other than me in the Reagan administration.
His name was T.K. Jones, and he was in the Pentagon, and Bush's father invested.
Let Tony finish.
But as far as a proposition that we had plans during the Cold War to be able to evacuate our cities, I believe – and you may be able to correct me on this – I believe that we pretty much abandoned that sometime in the late 50s, early 60s, when you stopped hearing those sirens going off every once a month at 10 a.m., and we shifted to mutual assured destruction, which is an attempt to avoid it and not survive it, because they recognized that it just wasn't plausible then, and it's certainly not plausible in the next few months or the next couple of years to be able to get to a point where we can completely evacuate or almost completely evacuate a major metropolitan area with no notice but 24 or 48 hours.
But still,
but you actually made the point, Tony, that it's not about the next 2 years. It's about the last 4 years.
And that's really about the future.
But it's not. Yeah, it's about the future now because it hasn't been done yet. And that's really what is not exactly a surprise, that if there is any natural disaster or a terrorist attack, you have to evacuate a big city.
I look forward to seeing the proposal in a practical engineering term as to how you do it. I mean, you folks know Los Angeles, and if you think that can be done, that you can barely move through that town during normal traffic, let alone when everybody is getting in their individual cars to get out of town and there aren't enough buses or trains to do it otherwise.
It's still fair to – which the Republicans would certainly do. When you have total GOP control in Washington 4 years after 9/11, the performance that our government has had and the lack of confidence that inspires in our institutions, I mean, it does feel like there is something deeply off. Bob, I want us to move on there.
Let me just defend Los Angeles. The fact is we've had major disasters here, you know, and we've had very serious earthquakes that a few of us here have lived through. And I must say this state has acted in an efficient manner, and I guess they got federal support. And it's a no-brainer to know you close some lanes on the opposing traffic where there aren't any cars. It requires a lack of leadership. It also makes sense you don't tell people to flee if there's no way to flee and they're going to be stuck in death-dealing traffic for the next 2 days. That's absurd.
Let me correct the record in two regards. First of all, I was down there in Texas and I heard what the mayor of Houston said. And what he said and what he told the fellow Houstonians was to use your judgment, and if you're not in a flood zone area, don't leave yet and let the people south of us come forward first. But people nonetheless disregarded the advice of the mayor and got on the road, and they weren't in a position to be able to arrest all the hundreds of thousands of people who got in their cars and drove. As far as surviving L.A. disasters, I've stood on my roof in Topanga Canyon hosing down my rooftop during a fire that almost came through. I've been through the earthquakes. They're horrible events, but they have no relationship to the mass evacuation of the city.
Let's talk for a second about the impact of all these events on the conservative momentum in Washington. On the conservative side, you're seeing lots of dissension among Republicans as they talk about trying to offset the new spending with spending cuts that even Tony, I know, you acknowledged in a visionary column this week are unlikely to be. You know, it's trouble when liberals start praising you, right? That it would not be possible under any conceivable political circumstance to achieve spending cuts on the order of magnitude to cover this, Iraq, plus all the tax cuts that we're still talking about. You've still got Republicans saying now is no time not to turn our back on, you know, cutting taxes more and making them permanent for the best off. I think we're at this moment of radical incoherence among conservatism. I suppose they're just hoping that they can sort of skate through the nutty fiscal policy, and if a Democrat's elected and has to raise taxes next time, they can turn around and blame the Democrats for restoring sanity. Is that the evil strategy, Arianna?
I think we're at the moment of sort of magical thinking, the expectation that we can pay for Iraq, for Katrina, for Rita now, and make the tax cuts permanent. It's sheer hallucination. And
like a Gabriel Garcia Marquez novel, you mean? It's sort of, you know, little fluttering things and butterflies rising out of nowhere and tax cuts?
Yes, and what is amazing is that there aren't enough Republicans even protesting. I mean, those who are protesting by suggesting their own multi-billion-dollar cuts in spending programs have really no moral standing, because the idea that we would cut all these programs before we ask the 1% of richest Americans to give back their tax cut, which would get us over $300 billion, is really preposterous. It is so indefensible that I cannot understand why they think they can keep defending it.
Up ahead, war demonstrations heat up. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Shearer is with me on the left. Tony Blankley in Washington on the right. Ariana Huffington also here in Santa Monica and somewhere beyond. Tony Blankley, I wanted to have you share your thoughts on what this all means for conservatism at this moment before we move on.
Well, I like to think that my editorial page is about ground zero and the struggle over how to do the funding of the Katrina reconstruction. We have a good editorial today that picks up on some of the proposals of the Republican Study Committee. We don't endorse all. We endorse some. I am traditionally a supply-sider with latent deficit hawk tendencies, and I think that there is a slow movement. It's not nearly a majority of the Republicans yet, but I believe that there are some Republicans who are sharing my personal view, which I haven't yet imposed on my paper, that we might be combined very substantial budget cuts with modest tax increases and the rest in financing it in debt. But there's no doubt that I would take the word radical off of your suggestion that there's incoherence, but there's clearly incoherence. Tom DeLay last week said there was no fat left in the budget. We criticized that. He said, well, I'd like to see the cuts. The Republican Study Committee came back with $1 trillion worth of cuts over 10 years. A lot of them not politically doable, and that's, of course, the key question. We came back with a review of that and said, back to you, Tom, and I believe we'll be running an article by him on Monday with his response to our response to his response. And if you want to understand the back and forth, and it is principled. This is not this is not a personality thing. It's a fight within a party over ideas and how to try to fund this deficit that is clearly going up towards 5% of GDP, which is usually considered sort of a danger zone, and we're not quite there yet, but we could be by the end of this funding mechanism. So it's a fascinating struggle, and I don't know how it's going
to
come out.
I want Bob to have one last word on this, but all I got to say is radical is exactly the word that's required when you a party that proposes paying for the Iraqi war, a massive Katrina, and who knows what else is going to be the reconstruction from Rita, and tax cuts for the wealthiest people in the country by borrowing all that money from the Chinese and putting the full bill for all this on our kids is, I think, immoral. Bob,
the word radical was modifying incoherence, not the substance. I think the incoherence is not radical. The substance may or may not be.
Bob?
Well said, Tony. You know, when I read Tony's column, I got sick to
He's a radically good arguer.
Well, I got sick to my stomach because I thought, oh, God, there goes our right-winger. He's becoming reasonable, and we'll have to find another
Don't
one.
Worry.
Same thing that happened to Ariana, who used to, after all, be the right on our show before she became...
Began to drink the Kool-Aid of Left, Right, and Center.
Before she became reasonable. But really, it's a great column because it says there is a middle ground. You know, we don't have to have wild increases in taxes. All of us pay taxes. We don't want that. But we do have to increase taxes, and there has to be give on the cut side, and there are programs that can be cut. But basically what I found, if you don't like the word radical, what I found good about the column and a lot of what we've heard from at least some Republicans is a recognition that we need the federal government. And remember, this is, you know, the Reagan Revolution was based on the idea that government was the problem, not just, you know, government could contribute occasionally to the problem, but was the problem. There is now, in the wake of both the disaster in Iraq and the money that's costing and what's happening with the natural disasters, a recognition, going back to Eisenhower, who did build those highways, and Pat Brown in California, going back to FDR, yes, we need a vigorous, aggressive government to help preserve life.
Well, I would point out that both parties believe in big government. We conservatives believe in a big government in defense, and traditionally liberals believe in a big government on domestic programs. We're certainly not anti-government. We're just anti-intrusion here within the domestic ranks. So I think to call the Republicans a party of small government, I mean, you remember the budget increases that Reagan pushed through on the defense side in the 80s.
And the only thing that really separates the parties now is that Democrats actually think you should pay for the government you want, not stick the bill on the kids. Let's go to Iraq.
Only while they're out of power. As soon as they get in, they won't want to do it.
Let's go to Iraq, where there are protests. A potential 100,000 people expected in Washington this weekend protesting the war. President Bush making some interesting statements this week in advance of that. He said, quote, withdrawing our troops would make the world more dangerous and make America less safe. He said to leave Iraq now would be to repeat the costly mistakes of the past that led to the attacks of September the 11th. He added, there are differences of opinion about the way forward. I understand that. Some Americans want us to withdraw our troops, that we can escape the violence. I recognize their good intentions, but their position is wrong, he said. Just a couple of poll factoids that have come in this week. 63% of Americans want the immediate withdrawal of, quote, some or all U.S. troops, according to CNN U.S. Today Gallup poll. That's 10 points higher than it was before Katrina. Two-thirds of Americans believe the government's spending too much in Iraq. Public approval of Bush's handling of Iraq stands at 32%, its lowest ebb since the war started. Arianna Huffington, you're raising your hand in the back. What's it all mean?
Well, here's really the problem at the moment. Talking to military experts, I was in New York recently. They are absolutely clear that we have lost the war. The war cannot be won. We are already at the beginnings of a civil war there.
Whose military leaders are you talking about?
No, no, no. Listen, first of all, go look at what Casey said. Look at what the commander on the ground said about the fact that we're going to be withdrawing troops by the end of 2006 and how he was shouted down. Some of them go out and speak in public occasionally and they're immediately shouted down. But the consensus at the moment is that this war is not winnable and that indeed our very presence there is making it harder to defeat the insurgency.
So that is
an absolute and equivocal fact that you talk to people across the political spectrum, Republicans, Democrats, who are serious about this issue, and there is no doubt about it. The second point is that also the administration has lost the public. I mean, the public opinion is now absolutely and equivocally against the war. So they've lost the war, they've lost the public. It's only a matter of time. The prediction is that we will have substantial troops withdrawn by the end of 2006. And the question is, the Democrats at the moment have a moment and a real opportunity to stand up and demand it right now, that there is a phased withdrawal of troops so that the resources that we are spending can be spent in a way that actually supports the new Iraqi government instead of actually spending all those resources in making fighting the insurgency harder.
And so you don't think, just before Tony, before I get you in, you don't think that those who argue that pulling out over the next year or so, even in a phased way, would leave the country an entire mess and
this
make matters worse?
Absolutely wrong. Absolutely unequivocally wrong, because our very presence there is the worst irritant that feeds the insurgency. Look at what happened to the British in Basra. I mean, this is an amazing example. This was a Shiite neighborhood where the Brits tried to get two British soldiers who had been captured out and created a raid on the police station, demonstrations in Basra. It is not a position which we can make any better by our presence. Far from it.
Let's hear from General Blankley. We've heard from General Huffington. General Blankley?
At most, Master Sergeant Blankley.
Corporal first of all, Tony Blankley.
And not to be a prissy grammarian, but when you said factoid, you used a word in suggesting that they were actual facts, but a factoid is something that looks like an oid is something that looks like something, but it is not. So you should have said interesting facts rather than interesting factoids. But
there,
to go back to
Matt.
But
I stand,
I'm sorry.
I stand corrected.
It's one of my pet peeves. But beyond that, CNN does it all the time. But beyond that, look, I talked to a fair number of military folk at pretty senior levels, and I agree that there is a lot of concern. But to characterize it as there is an overwhelming consensus that we cannot gain our objectives in Iraq, I don't believe that. That's not the reality I see as far as the opinion. But I do have a criticism of the president this week, and it's on the Iraq. And I believe it was yesterday when he said he was complaining complaining that the Syrians weren't helping seal the border where foreign terrorists were getting in. And my response to the president would be now, as it has been publicly and privately for a while, that we need more troops to seal that border, and that the president should put a little bit more commitment in rather than hold the status quo, which I think he's going to do for a very long time.
Bob?
Well, I think what Tony just said about public opinion is a factoid, as he defines it. Just appears to be a fact. But the public is very solidly aware of the danger of staying. They're aware of the Vietnam analogy of the quagmire label, and it works. But the great authority on this last week was the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia, who's held that job for some 30 to 40 years. And he said in Washington that the situation is disintegrating. And I can't think of a better word to describe what's happening. And the fact is that, as Ariana said, the assumption that more Americans or more British troops will somehow cool the thing out rather than that let the Iraqis run Iraq. You know, we've been there quite a long time. We've given them a lot of resources. We've given them a lot of advice. At what point do we say, okay, we liberated your country. Let's declare victory. It's your place. Make the best of it. That's what we mean by self-determination. It is absurd. I mean, what can we go on, another 20 years?
Let me just make one point. We have a constitutional process going on in Iraq right now, in October and December elections on the Constitution. It's noteworthy. It's not necessarily decisive, but it's noteworthy. The Sunnis are currently trying to resolve their disputes with the Shias and the Kurds through the constitutional process. Now, that may break down. I don't contest that it may break down. But so far, the leadership of the Sunnis and the vast majority of them are not participating in creating the kind of violence that would precipitate a civil war and the breakup of Iraq. So it's premature to say the political process is failing there.
No, but
it may happen or it may not.
But we're saying the military process
has
failed.
Well, the military
process is failing. We're saying the military process has failed. It's not failing.
No, we're going to have
The military process supports the political process. As long as the political process is going on, and if we can get an agreement between the Sunnis and the Shias, then they will. If the Sunnis commit to the process and the new governance, they will be able to have a tremendous power on suppressing the terrorists.
To be continued. We have reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center rants featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Just about 15 seconds each. Ariana Huffington, it's your soapbox.
Well, there is an Iraqi cameraman for CBS News, Abdul Hussein, who's been held by the U.S. military since April 5th. They refuse to give truthful answers as to why he's being held. It's one of the things the military is doing that's making it very much harder to get real news out of Iraq.
Tony Blankley.
As we mentioned during the show, the most interesting thing going on is the seeking of real, politically plausible cuts in the budget. I had done in my column suggesting 50 was as high as I could imagine. I now think it could be as high as 70 or 80. This is an interesting exercise and worth following.
Robert Scheer.
Yeah, in spirit of this weekend's peace rallies, give peace a chance. The administration finally did that, finally got back on track negotiation. We don't have to go to war with Korea. We followed the Chinese leadership on this, the South Korean leadership, and it's a lot better than invading and trying to take over a country and sacrificing more American lives and the resources of our country.
Just a cultural point. The JetBlue crisis this week, where the plane took off, had to circle for several hours unloading fuel because the landing gear was coming down at the wrong angle. One of the things that struck me about this is the idea that people, because JetBlue has individual TV screens at every seat, people were watching themselves and hearing the story of their own crisis while it was happening. I'm not smart enough to figure out what it means, but I think it marks some meta moment in the culture when people involved in these potential tragedies or crises are actually watching the narration real time. That's all the surreality we have time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Robert Scheer, Tony Blankley, and Ariana Huffington. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is Ray Guarna. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Left, Right, and Center.
Whoa, so if you like pajamas, I wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
But we know we need each other, so we better call a building up.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.